No, honest. I heard in America you only need to work 2 hours a day.
And you believe it? Ah. And what else did they tell you?
They say the streets are paved with gold.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, May 19th, 1946, we present the 27th in the distinguished NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today,
Gateway to a Land of Freedom.
By the President of the United States of America, a proclamation.
Across the United States today, in more than 1,200 cities, towns, and villages,
whereas our numerous citizens of foreign birth have shown loyalty and fidelity to their new citizenship,
the President's proclamation is being read to vast crowds, of which the one here in New York in Central Park at this moment numbers more than a million.
The President's proclamation. Now, therefore, I, Harry S. Truman, do hereby designate Sunday, May the 19th, 1946, as I Am an American Day.
And so today we report on
Gateway to a Land of Freedom.
This is John McVane in New York, reporting on the historic and dramatic background of today's celebration, our American problem of immigration, which we have fiercely debated for almost 300 years. From New York, one of our newest citizens will tell his own story, a tragic story of patience and hope, of being driven from place to place with the dream of America always on the horizon. And from Philadelphia, the immigration problems of today will be highlighted by the chairman of the National Committee on Immigration Policy, Earl G. Harrison.
And this is Robert McCormick in Washington, where we shall look at the records of congressional debate and legal argument to trace the story of the changing attitude of our lawmakers toward the question of immigrants. From our studios in the nation's capital, you will hear a member of the House Immigration Committee, Representative Ed Gossett of Texas. And we will hear directly from one of the large gatherings of new citizens taking place today throughout the nation. We are standing by.
The scene, the office of the American consul attached to one of our embassies abroad. The place, Vienna.
Mr. Summerstein, believe me, there is nothing I can do to help you.
Still nothing, eh? 14 years I have been waiting to go to America.
I know, and I'm sorry.
Oh, it's not easy to be patient, but I have done it. Now, sir, I do not need to tell you. Now it is no longer a question of patience. The Nazis will be in Vienna at any minute. It may be a question of life or death.
Well, if there were only... You see, I would... Mr. Summerstein, take my advice. Try Belgium or Switzerland. Why must it be the United States?
America is such a big country. There is a chance for a man. Europe is so small. Here it is always so much trouble.
Mr. Summerstein, we have what is called a quota law in the United States. That means we are only allowed to permit the entry of a certain fixed number of people each year from each foreign country. Now, you were born in Poland, so you come under the Polish quota. And that quota is filled 3 or 4 times over.
Of course.
The best I can do is to give you a quota number, and then we'll let you know when we reach that number.
But I must leave within the next few days. How long must I wait for this quota number?
At the least, about 2 years.
Mr. That scene took place in Vienna in 1938, and the man who'd gone to the American consulate for help did eventually reach a haven in America. And last week, here in New York, he became a citizen. Today, we have him as our guest in the studio. I would like to present Dr. Henry Summerstein.
Yes, Mr. McQueen. I was forced to wander from place to place for 17 years. First, I had to leave my native Poland because the village where I was born was burned to the ground by an invading army. Then I lived and worked in Vienna. Frequently, I went to the American consul, but always they said something about a quota. So for a time, I gave up trying. And then the Nazis came to Vienna, and I fled northwards toward Belgium. But they would not let me in. I wanted to try and swim across the river and get in without permission. My wife was willing to swim with me, but we did not know how to get our little five-year girl across. At last, we got permission to enter Switzerland. But we were allowed to stay only for 3 months, while I tried again to get on the quota list. On the last day of my 3 months, I was called to police headquarters in Zurich, a big, dark building.
Mr. Summerstein, you are not told to leave Switzerland within 3 months. That means you must leave tomorrow.
But I cannot go. I have not yet received my American quota. I cannot go anywhere else. No country will let me in.
Mr. Summerstein, half the people of Europe are trying to come and live in Switzerland. If we let them all stay, there would be no food left for our own people. I will give you 3 more days to try and arrange to leave. After that, I shall be forced to arrest you for illegal residence and deport you.
For 3 days, I walked from consulate to consulate. No country would let me in. On the afternoon of the third day, I got permission from the consul of Brazil to go and wait there. 2 years more I had to wait. Then, one morning in Rio de Janeiro, 5 years ago, I got a letter telling me to come to the American consulate.
Mr. Summerstein, this stamp on your passport is your United States quota visa. You may now travel to the United States, enter as an immigrant, live and work there. And after 5 years residence, you may apply for American citizenship. Good luck to you.
Mi familia es en España.
Why was it so hard for Henry Summerstein to get to the United States? Why did it take him 17 years of patient effort? If he could come here to Washington, he could find the answer in the background of our history. If he came to the Library of Congress and read the yellowing pages of the Declaration of Independence, he would see that one of the grievances listed against the mother country was interference with free immigration to the colonies.
But once those colonies became a nation, the question of immigration became a live issue. For 100 years, the argument wore on. Should there be restrictions on entry into these United States? The Industrial Revolution settled the argument for some time because industry needed more manpower than our country possessed. We needed manpower to open up the wealth of the land, manpower for the factories, people for the new cities.
In the 40 years after 1820, 4 million immigrants.
In 1860, we had 4 million foreign-born workers.
In 1880, more than 6.5 million.
By 1900, more than 10.25 million. And they were coming in at the rate of 1 million a year.
But behind the rising curve of the immigration statistics lay the story of a carefully planned campaign to attract industrial workers to America. In all the nations of Europe, our industrial employers, working through the shipping and railroad companies, had their agents. In Ireland...
Mary, pack up the bags. We're leaving tomorrow to cross the sea.
For heaven's sake, Mike, have you gone crazy? What happened?
Well, there was a laddie at the tavern tonight giving out these handbills. Here, look, here.
If you'll come to America, We'll pay your passage and guarantee a job when you get there.
So I went down to the steamship company and married is true, every blessed word.
And in the sweatshops of Germany, the dream of America was rising like a vision before the workers.
He told me that if I would go to America, they would pay my passage.
When you get there, you will be a slave, like you are here.
No, honest. I hear in America, you only need to work 2 hours a day.
And you believe it, huh? What else did they tell you?
They say the streets are paved with gold.
America, there are free schools for us children.
The drinking water comes out of pipes in the houses.
That ain't in New York, that one under the houses.
Mister, I want to go to America.
By the million, they came on the boats that steamed up New York Harbor, past the Statue of Liberty, on whose base are carved the famous words...
Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door.
That was the peak of immigrant traffic to this country. To Henry Summerstein, our new citizen of today, listening here in our studio, those scenes of unrestricted immigration must appear almost unbelievable. For his admission to the United States climaxed 17 years of monumental patience. What factors lay behind this change? Why were the strict quota laws necessary? Who first oiled the hinges of the golden door and fixed the lock and began to pull it shut?
Well, it was a rising fear, a fear that was first brought out in the open by the great American labor leader, the founder of our trade union movement, himself an immigrant from England, Samuel Gompers.
The majority of immigrants now come from countries where lower standards of life and work prevail. They threaten to destroy our standards. I know the American people in their generosity wish to maintain the United States as an open, free asylum to the oppressed of the whole world. But the United States cannot by itself solve all the problems of the world.
And one of those problems was epitomized by the attitude of the chief of police of the little independent state of Württemberg in Germany. To the chief's office, a subordinate brings a report.
Herr Commandant, there is no more room in the prisons for any more convicts. We have so many prisoners, every cell is filled 3 times over.
Take all the convicts, put them on boats, and send them to America as immigrants.
Yeah.
We will pay the steamship fare. It will save us money. Let the American government worry about them.
And when, in 1875, Congress passed a law forbidding the entry of convicts, the governor of Württemberg actually made a formal protest. The golden door was closing inch by inch.
1888, we bar people who are insane or paupers.
1891, we bar polygamists and people with loathsome diseases.
1903, we bar anarchists.
Step by step, bill by bill, Congress tightened the law. Inch by inch, the golden door was closing. And in 1924, we passed the present quota laws. The scene in the House was stormy as there rose to his feet the representative from Minnesota, Newt Weaver.
The question of immigration is our own to solve in the way we see fit.
We do not intend to close the door because we were here first, but because it is our door.
Right. That's right.
And we now want to close the door more tightly.
The quota law was passed, and the golden door of free and unhindered American immigration closed with a crash that reverberated around the world.
This year of 1946, under the quota law, we may give permission for 154,000 immigrants to enter the United States. That figure is a drop in the bucket compared to the hundreds of thousands of displaced persons in Europe, the hundreds of thousands of homeless and starving families who see on the far horizon the vision of an America with freedom and plenty. What should be our policy for the future for all these people? Should we let more of them in or less?
Well, here in Washington, during the past few weeks, a congressional committee considered a bill proposed by Representative Ed Gossett of Wichita Falls, Texas, under which for the next 10 years, we should let in only half of the present legal number of immigrants. To give us the arguments which lie behind this proposal, we have asked the representative from Texas to come to our National Hour microphone. So now, Mr. Gossett.
Those immigrants who first came to our shores came as pioneers to carve an empire out of a wilderness. Those who came later did so in response to a need for workers. Today, there is no wilderness. There is no need for additional workers. Most aliens who come today are not assets, but liabilities to the American life. Those of us who advocate a temporary reduction in immigration quotas are not lacking in sentiment. We have gladly welcomed and facilitated the entry of 100,000 alien brides of our returning soldiers. Students and temporary visitors are free to come. We would permit others to come who have any just claim on our bounty. But along with isolation, we also repudiate appeasement as a national policy. We can't buy European friendship by opening our doors to her refugees. We do our full duty when we send them food and clothes and money to the limit of our ability and resources. Our task becomes more complicated if we must also open our homes to them. If they are worth anything to us, they are worth much more to their homelands. As the efficient spokesman for the American Legion well said, the right sort of alien is needed to rebuild his own country, not ours. His opportunities for service are there, not here. Comparatively, we now have more aliens within our boundaries than any nation on the face of the earth. We should give this melting pot of ours a little more time in which to melt. We should not needlessly complicate the stress and strain of our many reconversion problems. Enlightened self-interest dictates at least temporary restraints on further immigration. We must make America fit and strong for her role as guardian of the peace.
Thank you, Mr. Gossett.
Shall we continue to need the new blood of the immigrants in the future? That is the question before the American people. Congressman Gossett says no. A man who says yes is the chairman of the National Committee on Immigration Policy. He's also a former commissioner of immigration and dean of the law school of the University of Pennsylvania. From the studios of Station KYW in Philadelphia, we bring you Earl G. Harrison.
As a result of my work as Director of Alien Registration in 1940 and 2 years as Immigration Commissioner, I feel I have some intimate knowledge of those who came to America from other lands. With considerable confidence, therefore, I make these points. First, America has been greatly strengthened in war and in peace by immigrants and the children of immigrants. In my opinion, we still need them. Second, the overwhelming majority of the alien population are loyal and law-abiding. Troublemakers and lawbreakers are found among the alien population to no greater extent than among the native-born. Third, to contend that immigrants take jobs from Americans is superficial and fallacious reasoning. Our whole history has demonstrated that many aliens create jobs here. Fourth, Our present immigration quotas permit the admission of only 154,000 people a year, one-tenth the number of people who die annually in the United States. The small immigration presently permitted by our laws cannot possibly affect our internal economy adversely. It will be, in my opinion, in the best interest of America if Congressman Gossett, for whom in so many ways I have high regard and respect, does not succeed in his most untimely proposal to close further our already but slightly open door of immigration.
We return you now to New York.
And thank you, Mr. Harrison. At the start of this program, we heard the dramatic story of the wanderings of Henry Summerstein. We heard how, after 17 years, he finally got permission from our consul in Rio de Janeiro to come to America to live and work. But surely, Dr. Summerstein, that was hardly the end of your problems. You didn't speak our language. You were hardly adjusted to American life. What happened?
It is a very average story. With my wife and daughter, I came to live in New York. I went for 2 years to study dentistry at the University of Minnesota. Not speaking the language well, it was a little hard. Now I work in New York. My wife helps me. My girl is now 13 and goes to public school. 2 years ago, we applied for citizenship. Last Monday, I took the oath of allegiance and became an American.
Dr. Summerstein, we have a little surprise for you.
What's that?
This gentleman approaching our microphone has something to interest you. He's Joseph V. Buscano of the United States District Court.
On behalf of the Department of Justice of the United States, I want to welcome you, Dr. Summerstein, and your wife to full citizenship. Here are your certificates of naturalization, certifying that you now are full citizens with the right to vote. Good luck to you.
Thank you, sir.
Henry Summerstein, within the last few minutes, you've reached the end of your 17-year search for the freedom that's American citizenship. It would be futile for me to ask whether you're happy, but let me ask you this. What thought at this moment is uppermost in your mind?
It is significant for the American citizenship that you are welcomed in America, and there is a day on which new citizens are welcomed. But the most important thing is the people with whom you live and work. And the people here in America are wonderful. This is a big country, and there is room here for a man to live with success. I would rather die than ever leave this country.
And Dr. Summerstein's daughter, Helen, is now 13. 5 years ago, she couldn't speak one word of English. Helen, how well are you doing now?
I feel just like an American. I chew gum, play baseball, and listen to Charlie McCarthy.
Today, Henry Summerstein represents almost 250,000 immigrants who've become American citizens during the past year. What about the others? Where did they come from? What are they thinking today? Many thousands of them are gathered at this moment all over the nation, in Central Park, Soldiers Field, Chicago, and in many another city. And we are about to welcome our first shipload of new immigrants since the war. Early tomorrow morning, 867 war refugees from Europe will hail the Statue of Liberty as they reach New York Harbor, the first immigrants from Germany since the end of the war. For many of them, adults and children alike, there'll be a joyous reunion with friends and relatives after long years of tragedy. Their ship, the Marine Flasher, is scheduled to dock at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning at the 64 Pier, which is at 24th Street in the Hudson River, Manhattan. In the meantime, the long and roundabout journey of 1,014 Jewish refugees from the Balkans ended today at Haifa in Palestine. There, the Jews were detained for a while at La Spezia, Italy. Their ship halted because they planned to enter Palestine illegally. That touched off a furor, a series of irate Jewish demonstrations there, until Britain agreed to admit them under immigration quotas. Just 30 years ago this month, there was another ceremony when on a dull, cold day in Philadelphia, 5,000 new citizens listened to a haggard-looking man in a cutaway coat. That man was Woodrow Wilson, President of the United States.
This is the only country in the world which experiences this constant and repeated rebirth. This country is constantly drinking strength out of new sources by the voluntary association with it of great bodies of strong men and forward-looking women out of other lands. And so, by the gift of the free wills of independent peoples, it is being constantly renewed from generation to generation.
Gateway to a Land of Freedom was the subject of our documentary, and this is what we have learned.
That this nation was built and made great by the millions of immigrants who came here from other lands and by their descendants to whom America was home. That during the last 100 years, we have gradually been closing the door, closing it first to the unfit and the misfits, and then restricting entry in the belief that our national economy would suffer. That the question before the American people today is whether this is the time to clamp down still further on the flow of immigration, or whether the quota of foreigners coming to our shores can be assimilated and make their contributions as citizens of our democracy.
On the subject of immigration, then, on this I Am an American Day, our documentary is closed.
But this is John McVane inviting you to listen to the National Hour next Sunday, when our subject will be The Jalopy Journal, A Story of the Automobile.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York, Washington, and Philadelphia, NBC has brought you the 27th in its series of broadcasts on current affairs and national problems. John McVane was your narrator, substituting for Robert St. John, with Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.